Weight loss solutions are not one-size-fits-all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Have you ever wondered if living in a tiny home could be the key to financial freedom? Stay tuned to learn how downsizing your space can upsize your life. Welcome to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, guiding you through the maze of your money. Let's get talking. Welcome to today's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Today we'll be diving into the world of tiny house living. We'll discuss what a tiny house is, what a tiny home is, the motivations behind choosing this lifestyle, and how it can benefit various demographics. We'll also explore the financial impact of housing debt and the opportunities that come from choosing a non-traditional living situation. Lastly, we'll provide some practical advice and share some inspiring success stories. The money talking points for today's episode are: how could tiny homes benefit you? And 2, how does housing debt impact you? And 3, what kind of opportunities would arise if you chose a non-traditional living situation? With the money talking points in mind, let's get talking. Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's interview on Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. Joining me today, I have Laura Lynch, and we're talking about the opportunities that can come about when you choose smaller living arrangements, maybe a tiny home, things like that. So I'm really excited and looking forward to this conversation because this is a space that's interested me a lot. Maybe we don't need to go for the biggest bang for our budget that the banks will let us borrow. And we're going to talk about it a little bit more in depth today. But Laura, thanks for joining. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself for everybody?
Yeah, Skylar, thank you so much for having me. I am Laura Lynch. I am recording in my tiny house. I am the founder of the Tiny House Advisor. I do financial planning with folks that are choosing alternative housing options for the purposes of financial freedom and flexibility. I'm also the host of the podcast Less House, More Moolah. So I focus, you know, really in this space exclusively and live in this space personally.
Awesome. I like the living in it personally. That's really, really useful for everybody listening. But also I love when people come on that have podcasts because then there's extra resources that if they hear something they like, they know where to turn. So I'm excited for this conversation to learn more myself and learn more of the opportunities that smaller living can bring about. But what is tiny house living?
Yeah, so I think that depends on who you ask. I would say, you know, tiny house, we definitely understand, you know, structurally what a tiny house is that we've seen on HGTV and other places. If you look at legal definitions, you'll see something less than 400 square feet. But for me, I really define, you know, tiny house living or tiny living as more about intention. So being aware that the size of your space, you don't have to default to the most house that you can afford, that you can be more intentional about how much you want to spend on your shelter. And by doing so, then you have the ability to shift gears and focus on other things that might be more important to you. So I really think it's more about mindset than it is about square feet.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, because if you're intentional about all sorts of areas in your life, whether it's car purchases, where you're working and making sure then you're living close to it and you're being intentional about all that, that's the real way you save money. It's not so much about the small things that you do or don't purchase. It's about being intentional about those big things. But what led you to this intentionality? What led you to you said you're recording in your tiny house, so we can see it all in the background. So what led you to this lifestyle?
Yeah. So some of it's accident, some of it's purposeful, but basically I was originally in the military, so I had moved around quite a bit. And when I landed in my most recent state, I got sort of marooned there because I got remarried. And so there was family ties and that sort of thing. And so I started to miss the western part of the U.S. where I had lived previously. And so my partner, Eric, and I bought some acreage out in New Mexico where I'm sitting right now. And then we were like, well, what are we going to do with this land? Because we were both in the corporate environment at that time. And that's where tiny houses maybe had just started to be in sort of the ether. And so we decided that we would build a tiny house and bring it out here. So that's what we did. We spent a year Saturdays building our tiny house. We brought it out and put it on the land. Then fast forward a few years, the pandemic came along, and I was a financial advisor at that point. My income was sort of plummeting with the market in March of 2020. And I felt a lot of stress around my American dream house mortgage. And I'm like, what are we doing? Why are we spending so much of our mental energy and our time? Why is so much of my life wrapped around paying for this really, you know, sort of traditional lifestyle, when really all I want to do is go live in my tiny house and feel more free and feel less burdened? And so that's when we hatched a 30-month project plan to downsize out of, we had a couple of different real estate pieces, two different businesses that had to be moved across the country, lots and lots of logistics to get into our tiny house. And we've just been here full time now for 3 whole weeks.
Wow. So yeah, you're like, you slowly tiptoed into it and then you just went into it and here you are. So I guess after 3 weeks, are you sticking with it, or are you starting to look how to get out of it?
Well, we've been coming to this house for a number of years, more as a, you know, I don't say a vacation, because when we're here, we're always working on the project and the land. But we've been coming here for a long time. So we've had a lot of time to like understand and internalize the change that was going to happen, which is something I definitely recommend for people. If you're going to go from, you know, like I did, 2,300 square feet down to 300 square feet, then definitely having those opportunities to try it and feel your way into it is really helpful.
Yeah, which totally makes sense, because most people, like you said, that American dream mortgage or that 6-bedroom, 4-bath, like plenty of space for everybody, down to what I assume in your place is probably a 1-bedroom, 1/2-bath. Who knows? Like when you cut down that much space, you lose a lot of that just room you have. So I like the idea of tiptoeing into it. But how can this smaller house benefit everyone? Because I even think you're probably living a more intentional lifestyle, saving some money, of course, from that mortgage. But how does it benefit other people, or even just thinking about a smaller house?
Yeah, so there's like three sort of demographic sets here. First is, of course, folks that are trying to get their first house, where housing is incredibly unaffordable. Housing prices have gone up 423% in the last 40 years. And so it's just become very unaffordable for many people to get started in housing. So, you know, to get started with a smaller home of some sort, including tiny homes, of course, there's a lot of other alternative housing options out there, but this is a great way to get started. Then for folks that are trying to downsize into retirement, you know, maybe their family is grown and gone and they're trying to figure out, hey, how do I spend more time with my kids? I'd like to spend more time volunteering. Maybe I want to retire a little bit early and switch gears towards more passion projects. So folks in retirement, this is very common too. This is where we see solutions like granny pods and things where we can have accessory dwelling units, actually multi-generational housing setups, that sort of thing. And then folks like me who are middle-aged, who, you know, the kids are just sort of leaving. I have a stepson in my life who is just graduated high school, thus the timing of our move. And so, you know, this is a great time for Gen X to really pivot their careers into work that maybe they've done their corporate ladder climbing and they're sort of burnt out from that and they want to find something more meaningful to do. And they also want to, you know, use this opportunity while the kids are off on, you know, getting out on their own to downsize. Middle age is also a great opportunity. It's all these inflection points in life.
Yeah. And you really just covered the whole wide range. When what I just learned is it's really, I think, good for everyone, except maybe the person that has four kids at home that are all little. That was the one you didn't mention. And that's the one that I think would be pretty crazy if you were in a smaller living arrangement. But I also, when I thought of that question, my thought too is potentially if we have more people living in these smaller homes, we could get more people in a community. Things are less sprawled out, suburban sprawl and that sort of stuff is where my mind went with that question. But I love how you spoke to, there's so many different demographics that can benefit from it, whether it's living closer to relatives who could maybe take care of you as you're aging, or you're closer to grandkids that you can spend time with and maybe help watch, things like that. There's a lot of benefits that come from not going ginormous and having everything be as big as possible. But how does housing, that you mentioned the American Dream mortgage, how does that impact people's lives and their finances?
Yeah, I do want to, before I get to that, do emphasize your point, Skylar, about the footprint, right? And, you know, a lot of tiny homes are in communities, right? So you're getting a return to that community neighborhood feeling that we all maybe kind of want to live in, where you have that great relationship with neighbors. And a lot of tiny home communities are really focused on sustainability, and tiny homes have a very small fraction of the footprint. So, one thing that's really resonated with me was I knew I was air conditioning a lot of rooms in my house while I was sitting on the porch. And so I feel really much better about having the smaller space and being able to be outside and not feel like I'm being so wasteful. So I think that having smaller homes, generally speaking, benefits us all in that regard. But to housing debt, my gosh, you want to talk about not being able to take risk in your life, right? When we're all just waking up every morning and going to our jobs to make sure that we can pay for our cost of living, which of course we know is supposed to be, you know, 35% of our income spent on housing. That's kind of like a good, you know, ratio when they talk about giving you a mortgage. But the reality is by the time you're paying for your rising insurance costs, which are hitting the, you know, the country hugely, and your taxes and the maintenance and improvements on that property, all those things, we end up spending a ton of things on just that one thing, our roof, our shelter, right? Which is the most basic need when we think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Yes. Shelter, food, water, right? Very basic things. And if your house is lighting you up every day and giving you a tremendous amount of joy, then awesome. But for those people where it's just a thing that they do because they think they're supposed to do it, then they have options when considering how much stress and debt that they really want to take on for your home, because that debt is long lasting. You get into a mortgage, right? Most common is the 30-year mortgage. How many times in 30 years are you going to want to maybe think about doing something different, changing careers, moving, what have you? And you're going to be subject to the whims of what's going on in the interest rate environment and kind of have all of your eggs in that one basket. And the reality with home equity that we all, you know, sort of think is so, you know, important to us is that the only way to ever get in home equity is to pay more interest and fees to yet another, you know, debt obligation, to another mortgager, to another loan company, until the moment at which you sell it and you downsize for cash. And so it is just, it is not, you know, home equity is not a bucket of money that you can just sell your fourth bedroom and cash out $100,000 to help you, you know, launch your new side hustle, right? It doesn't work.
It all comes with interest. It always does. Whether it's sizing up to a bigger home and you're using some of that equity for a different loan, then one way or another, all of that equity, the only way to use it, like you said, is to get rid of the property. And if you need to live, like, that's not totally feasible. But also, to speak to your point about the long time horizon that it truly is, I even think of, I'm 26, just turned 26, and I think I don't go a couple weeks without thinking, oh, what else could I do in my life? Like, being in a home isn't something that really makes a whole lot of sense, honestly, outside of maybe that one demographic that tiny home living isn't really great for, with having a bunch of kids. Because if you have a bunch of kids, maybe that long time horizon is something that's truly going to keep you somewhere. But the rest of those, there's so many whims and things that could happen that make renting or a smaller home so much of a better option. So I like the way you framed that. I think that's really great.
Yeah. And that, you know, is exactly the point of opportunities, right? You're the next point, right? Opportunities of non-traditional is all those opportunities that come to you, all those ideas of things that you might want to do, right? By choosing to not spend so much of your time, energy, and focus on just that one thing, your house, you can, you know, sort of tease out those opportunities and follow those paths. There are 3 million people living in van life right now, right? Yeah. They are grasping at the opportunity to see more places, to travel, to meet interesting people, to do, you know, gig work or remote work or what have you, and to create more balance in their life for between living their life and living to pay for their bills, right? So I love the opportunities that come from non-traditional living, including the option to learn some new skills. People that get into van life or tiny homes often do some of the work themselves, so they learn some new skills that who knows might be valuable at some point. And it really builds our confidence and competence to tackle those new avenues that we might come across in life. When you build your own house, you can do absolutely anything.
Yes. Yeah. And self-reliance is a huge deal. Like if you can get to that point where you don't have to log into some app for something simple because you can just take care of it. It's one really gratifying. It just feels awesome to fix something like that. So I like the things we're speaking to here. Maybe what are some other opportunities? I know, like you said, this was our next topic, and I know you just mentioned a bunch of them, but is there maybe some other opportunities that come from choosing this non-traditional living situation?
Well, there's definitely opportunity to help others do it. There's a significant need for tiny house parking. And so for those of your listeners who might be interested in real estate as investment purposes, you know, if you can get a hold of some land and build your own tiny house and then maybe create some parking for others, there's some income that to be had there. And certainly if you can figure out how to make a non-traditional living situation work for you, you can probably make it work for other people, create community there, and also produce some potential income. And then there is the, you know, sustainability piece that we talked about. There's the competence piece that we talked about. There's the opportunity to maybe not, you know, work 40 hours a week or 60 hours a week or whatever, so that you can maybe work on some other craft, skill, art, you know, that you're interested in. So just a lot of opportunity for flexibility. And, you know, who knows, maybe the next, you know, cure for cancer comes from somebody who quit their stupid corporate job and was able to focus their efforts on something that was more important to them.
Yeah, I like that. One thought that came to my mind as you were talking about opportunities in real estate to house other ones. One that checks the community thing we were talking about earlier, where maybe you can build your own little community around your tiny home. But also I did have the thought come to mind of what's the maybe the difference between tiny home living and the way you're saying have others park in your lot and maybe like a mobile home park, because that's the instant comparison that came to my mind. Are they the same? Is there same opportunities there? Or what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah. So now we're sort of stepping into the weeds a little bit of the definitions and legal complexity. So, you know, mobile home parks were designed for mobile homes, which aren't, you know, tiny per se, you know, from the legal description standpoint. So many mobile home parks that are sort of, you know, on their last leg, shall we say, are being rehabilitated for tiny home living. So very often municipalities who maybe have a mobile home park that they don't really, you know, they don't really love having in their community will be open to the idea of turning it into a tiny house community. But when it comes to developing tiny home communities, you have to work with your municipality to create those parking and that infrastructure specifically for homes that are going to be 400 square feet or less. And so there is a process that you have to go through with your municipality. It's going to look different than what they did to set up a mobile home park. But still, you have to work within your, you know, jurisdiction, your governing jurisdiction.
Cool. Well, that answers that. I just, when you started explaining it, I was like, oh, there's a slight similarity. So I like the idea of them being converted. That sounds like a great potential idea for those places, but there's obviously going to be challenges. We're making it sound like maybe it's all sunshine and rainbows so far, and everyone should go buy a 400 square foot tiny home, but what are some of the challenges people face with transitioning? You mentioned tiptoeing into it. What are some of the other things?
Yeah. So, the road to a tiny house is definitely not paved, right? So when you buy a American Dream house or any version of that, right, a single family home, you are on a paved path that has been paved by a mortgage industry that, of course, makes a lot of money on those, yes, you know, mortgages, right? There is not yet a mortgage for tiny homes. And so figuring out how you're going to pay for a tiny home is one challenge. Another one is figuring out where you're going to park it. And so that's why I mentioned, you know, encouraging folks to explore that idea of, you know, creating parking for yourself and others, because parking is a huge challenge because there just isn't enough municipalities that are getting on board with the idea. And so then, you know, you've got to figure out where. Of course, tiny homes sometimes can be nomadic and traveling, and then sometimes they're permanently placed. And so one of the first things you have to do is know yourself and know what you're trying to do with your tiny home, where it is that you want to be with it, whether that's moving around or permanently placed, whether you're renting your space or buying some land and developing it. All of those things mean that you have to explore, research, ask questions about what is legal for you. And if you pick a community that has tiny homes in it, they've already done the legwork for you. But if you're doing something that's kind of on your own or independent or on land or, you know, traveling around with your tiny home, you have to do some pre-research to make sure that you are able to take it and put it where you want to.
Yeah. And that's the flip side of the opportunity that you have, is there is a little bit more legwork in it, because like you said, the American dream is this carved out thing that we're supposed to all fall in line with, that you work 40 hours to pay for your mortgage, to pay for your gas, like all that sort of stuff is built out for you. But so there's the flip side of it, is make sure you're ready and prepared to do some of the legwork yourself. Sounds like it's worth it to me though.
Yes. Awesome. Well, nothing great, nothing worth doing is ever easy, right? I think that's the saying. So
someone is sitting there listening to this podcast episode and they're like, I want to do this. I want to go for it. What's some advice that you might have for people that are looking into this beyond just work with your local people?
Yeah. So there's a lot of great resources out there. Obviously, you can get all jazzed up about all the different designs and builders and all of that through, you know, YouTube or HGTV. But when it comes to figuring out the actual plan for it, there are some great service providers out there to help you navigate. The Tiny Home Industry Association, T-H-I-A, is a great go-to resource for all kinds of things about what's happening with legalization. I'm actually volunteering on a resource map on that website to help make sure that we're keeping up to date with what's happening in the legalization space, communities, builders. Builders often, if you're going to have a tiny home build for you, will be able to provide you with a lot of good guidance as well. And then there's some, you know, folks like me out there who are helping people navigate this process, either through logistics, in my case, the financial piece of things. So all of those people, you know, you can probably find easily through one of the networks like the Tiny Home Industry Association or by Googling. So, you know, take some time and do some research, figure out the where of it, start working on your financial plan for it, because nobody's going to hand you a 15-year mortgage on a tiny home right now. And, you know, just figure out deeply why it's important to you and hold on to that why, because you are going to need a little bit of grit to get you through the process. Yeah.
That's where I was figuring we were going to end up, is it's not something that's normalized. You hear all sorts of cities and stuff pushing back against these ADUs, like you said, on their property for grandmas and things like that, when they could be great opportunities. So there's going to be a little bit of push that you got to go through and red tape and that sort of stuff. But it can be successful, and I'm sure you've heard stories. I'd love to hear maybe a few more, or one or two if you have a couple good ones in mind, because we've heard your story about how you tiptoed into it, and now 3 weeks later, you're fully living in a tiny home. What are some stories of others that you've known that have achieved maybe financial freedom through, or these great opportunities through tiny house living?
Yeah, Alaska Wagoner, the tiny house concierge, is her personal story is really fascinating. At some point, she sat down in her life in Southern California and like analyzed what everything she had of value down to a half a jar of mayonnaise is what she told me when I interviewed her, and just figured out that by switching her housing cost to a tiny house, it was the largest raise she could ever give herself, right? And so when we think about those folks who are living in California, you know, is one great example where housing costs are so, so unaffordable. I've talked to a number of folks in California who have chosen, you know, tiny living as their way to create work that they're passionate about and not feeling, you know, that pressure and being able to live in a place where they really want to live because they just chose a different path. And California is actually one of the most forward-thinking and progressive states when it comes to making room for ADUs and even tiny homes on wheels. You know, Austin, Texas has a great program where they're allowing multiple ADUs in on properties. They've really reduced the parking requirements and setbacks, and they're even making little condo units out of multiple ADUs on properties. So a lot of good progress happening there. You know, people are doing great work with shed conversions, going out and buying land that's unrestricted, buying sheds, building them out themselves, turning them into living spaces, either for, you know, vacation or retirement or what have you. I've interviewed a ton of people living in schoolies. I love schoolies because the bus is just structurally very like designed to last a long time as opposed to maybe an RV. And that creates so much opportunity to be creative with your living space and to be moving around to different places if you want to be more mobile. I've had some great conversations with folks doing, you know, schoolie build outs who got the opportunity to stop, you know, working their really stressful career and instead work on some more passion-based work. And so just, oh my gosh, so many great people that are doing amazing things because they're willing to be a little outside of the box and they're, you know, questioning the notion that you have to buy as much house as you can afford.
Awesome. I love it all. I love all of what we've been saying. I like the idea of putting it on wheels. Then you have opportunity to maybe travel with it in your tiny home. Maybe it makes it a little easier to get the parking situation figured out. There's a lot of opportunity there, but you're leading us right into talking a little bit about your podcast and learning how can people learn more about you, find you online and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So my podcast is Less House, More Moolah. So you can find it on all the podcast platforms and on YouTube. My website is thetinyhouseadvisor.com. And I'm actually running a cool event right now for the Financial Freedom Calculator, which is a opportunity to, if you've never, you know, sat down with your money before, it's something that we typically all avoid and you want to kind of get things sorted out. I have that offer and that's going on through altamericandream.com.
Cool. Awesome. Great stuff out there. My last question that I ask all of my guests is, what is one thing you wish you would have known sooner when it comes to money?
Yeah. So I wish I had had the bravery and confidence to not do what I was supposed to do, right? That pressure. I mean, I got out of the Air Force and I came back to the U.S. and the first thing was, oh, I guess we just better buy a house, right? And that was like the thing that had to be done. And I bought my first house in Las Vegas, Nevada in 2007, right before the Great Recession crash. And that was a huge life lesson that definitely sort of fed into my fed upness with, you know, kind of doing the thing I'm supposed to do and then being in this stuck position because I found myself back there again in the middle of the pandemic. And so I just wish that I had kind of learned that lesson a little bit faster. But of course, you know, tiny homes weren't quite the thing back in 2007 that they are today.
Yeah, I'm glad we're making progress on this sort of stuff because the more options people have, the better. So I'm happy to have you on the podcast. This has been great to learn about this little niche area and home ownership. And Laura, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Skylar. It was lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much to Laura for coming on today's episode. I think that was a really educational and insightful interview, and I know I learned a whole bunch from it. But let's talk about the impact that this interview could have on you. One thing that I took away from it is that housing is more than just a mortgage payment. And this is a throwback to my renting versus buying conversation with Heather Eason from a couple weeks ago, where we also talked about how there's much more to consider than just the mortgage payment. There's a whole lot more to consider, like taxes, insurance, and emergency savings. And that's something you really have to think about when you're deciding whether or not you're going to buy or rent and what a mortgage payment can do to you. When you own things, you're not at the whims of the market. That's another thing I learned from today's interview, both with inflation and with your own living situation. When you own the land you're on, or when you own the home you're in, you don't have to move or react at the whims of the market, and you're able to be stable in where you're living. But if you have something like a variable mortgage or a variable HELOC, then you're putting yourself at a lot of risk. You need to consider housing as a risk factor, similar to how you would think about investing, and make sure you look at other options, because there might be something that's better and less risky for you besides a mortgage payment or other ways to use the equity in your home. And let's not also forget to cover the opportunities that a different living situation can afford you. We'll talk about this more in a moment with the money talking points, but I want to get your mind brewing about the different opportunities that you could take advantage of if you were to maybe look at a non-traditional living situation. But if you want to do this, there may be a battle legally with your local city when you're trying to move, so be aware of that and connect with other people and network, because that's one thing that I learned is that the tiny home community is one that you have to lean on and learn from. So there may be able to be people to point you in the right direction of a good builder or connect you with the right resources to help you fight the good fight in your local city. But next, let's talk about the money talking points. So the first money talking point is, how could tiny homes benefit you? And think about this in more ways than just your living situation. The impact on people living in a smaller space could be great. Maybe you want to live in a smaller space, or there's more people living in a smaller space, which is great because it provides the opportunity to build a more sustainable community, makes transit options a whole lot easier, makes less driving much more of a feasible option, and you live closer to the people around you. You build community, your friends are only a short walk away. So there's a lot of great things that come from promoting tiny home living in your community and allowing it to happen. So make sure you're thinking about how it could benefit you by benefiting the people that you're living around. The second money talking point is, how does housing debt impact you? Are you locked into a job right now because of housing debt? Is that something that you're saying, I can't switch jobs because I need to meet a certain threshold of income, and that makes it so that you can't move? Are you locked out of opportunities because of your mortgage payment? Do you have to do something in order to pay your mortgage that you really don't want to do? Does housing debt make it so you can't enjoy your lifestyle and you're stuck working a hard job to make ends meet? Does housing debt make it so that you can't travel as freely as you would like to? Is it something where you're not able to go on the trips you want to because you need to be working in order to make ends meet, in order to pay your housing payment? Whereas if you were living in a tiny home, maybe you don't need to work as much. Maybe you're working a 20 or 30 hour week and you're enjoying working the land, living on your garden, things like that. So think about, how does housing debt limit you when you look for a job, or is it limiting your free time because you have a long commute? There's a lot of ways that housing debt truly does impact us when you really start thinking about it, and that can drive people to become advocates in their community for more sustainable communities, better living situations, or maybe you find a job that's closer and you cut down on your expenses because you realize, hey, I need a change of pace. But that's the second money talking point. Consider how housing debt impacts you and talk about that one with a friend. The third money talking point is, what kind of opportunities would arise if you chose a non-traditional living situation? Would you be able to do more with your free time if you chose a non-traditional living situation? What skills would you be able to learn because you need those skills because you're living in a non-traditional living situation? Are you able then to build a close community and have more social interactions with people, which is great for our health? And I think studies after studies show that having social relationships are great for our long-term health and helping us live longer and happier lives. Let's not also forget the financial flexibility that different situations allow you to bring about. You can save more money. You can spend money on the things that you want to spend money on. You also reduce the need for expensive taxes and insurance when you choose to live outside the normal paved American dream. Like we talked about in the interview, the American dream's paved with a 30-year mortgage, a big house, and a lot of cars and a lot of expenses. So when you look outside of that traditional living situation, it really gives you all sorts of different opportunities, and it's something that's really worth considering. But I do want to cover next a little bit of news about tiny homes so that if you're looking into it, you can kind of know the legal situation, but let's talk about that next. So in tiny home news, I learned that it's legal in 38 states. I found a site that gives laws on a state-by-state basis, and I'll make sure it's linked in the show notes, but it's this place called worldpopulationreview.com/state-ranking/tiny-house-laws-by-state. It is, of course, linked in the show notes that you can go and find it. One thing that I learned as I was looking into that is many states still have local city regulations that may be restricting where you can live and have a tiny home. So make sure you're doing some research before you consider this, because like we talked about in the interview, it is a bumpy, rocky road that you're going to go down if this is something you want to do. But from what I've learned and just from this conversation, I think it's something that I would encourage people to do. At least check it out, because it seems like a super awesome way to live. It's an awesome way to own your home, awesome way to live self-reliantly. That's something I talked about, have some good self-reliance principles in it. It's a good option. So look into it. Check out the link in the show notes for laws on a state-by-state basis. Next, I want to talk about the power of intentional living. So this episode is called Tiny Homes and Intentional Living because I want to not only focus on tiny homes and everybody living in this minuscule little property, but I also want to focus on the idea we talked about with intentional living. The idea that I think tiny homes really brings about is being aware of your space and your spending. Tiny home living is more than just size. It's being aware of how much you're spending. As was shared in the story about Southern California, the biggest raise that that person could get was from reimagining their housing situation. So whether it's spending money on a home or other purchases like a car, they all make a difference when you're intentional about them. Choosing where we work can also have a huge impact on your time, mental health from commuting, and of course, money from commuting. A good question to consider is, are you paying just for the ability to get to work, to pay for the ability to get to work? Is it this terrible cycle where you're just paying to be able to commute to the job that you need in order to pay to be able to commute to the job you don't like? I hope you see the cycle I'm going in here. Because there's a lot of things in this paved American dream that I keep referencing that is not intentional. It's just going with the whims and it's expensive. So we need to make sure we're being intentional. And let's also talk a little bit about debt. We need to make sure we're intentional about how we're going into debt. You absolutely don't want to strap yourself into a situation that you are going to wind up being stuck in, confused in, and frustrated in. Debt can be a useful tool, don't get me wrong, but it can also limit our freedom in a very, very big way. We also need to make sure we're investing in experiences. When you live intentionally, you might find yourself spending more on experiences that enrich your life. That is okay. You might find yourself spending on things like travel, education, hobbies, rather than just accumulating stuff or just pouring money back into the American dream that you're not really sure what you're doing with. These experiences can lead to personal growth and fulfillment that money alone can't buy. So honestly, when you're investing in experiences and using money intentionally, that's how you get to the point where money is buying you happiness. Let's also talk a little bit about a safety net though, because when you have lower expenses and you're more intentional with your spending, it can be a whole lot easier to build an emergency fund or to recover your emergency fund when you have to use it. A proper emergency fund and safety net provides financial security and peace of mind, or it allows you to take risks and pursue other opportunities without the fear of financial ruin, knowing you have a little bit of a safety net behind you. And that all comes from the choice of intentional living by making it easier to build your safety net and your emergency fund. What are some practical steps towards intentional financial choices? How can you start making more intentional financial choices? Here's some few practical steps. 1. Evaluate your spending. Take a close look at where your money is going each month and identify the areas where you can cut back without an impact on your quality of life, because those are the things that got to go right away. 2. Set clear financial goals. Whether it's paying off debt, saving for a down payment, or building an emergency fund, having clear goals will help you stay focused and motivated, and I would add, write them down. It's an old episode at this point, but I have an episode titled A Written Plan, and it's a good one, all about writing down your goals and how much that helps. So go check it out. 3. Simplify your life. Embrace minimalism, not in just your living spaces, but in your finances. Reduce the number of accounts, automate your savings, and eliminate unnecessary subscriptions and services. And 4, seek value. Always consider the long-term value of your purchases. Will this add lasting value to your life, or is it just a fleeting desire? This is where things like the 24-hour rule can come in play in a big way. But that's today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it, but I'm going to wrap it up next. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. That's a wrap on today's episode of Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. We dove into the fascinating world of tiny house living, and boy oh boy did we cover a lot of ground, and I learned a lot, and I hope you did too. From discovering that tiny home living is not just about squeezing your life into a shoebox, but more about intentionally making space for what really matters. We explored how tiny homes aren't just for those fresh out of the nest or retirees looking for a cozy granny suite. No, they are for middle-aged career pivoters, first-time home buyers. There's a lot of things that they help you get away from. They help you dodge those crazy housing market fiery hoops that you have to jump through and allow you to build a community without HOA headaches. And let's not forget the opportunity to become a tiny house guru, because there's a lot more need for storage, parking, and tiny house wisdom. But housing debt, as we learned, is the financial equivalent to quicksand, dragging you down while you're just trying to stay under that magic 30% rate that everyone tells you to stay under. The debt, the longevity of it all, is a lot to take in. But tiny house living? Well, it's like an inflatable raft in our sinking financial ship, and it's a great opportunity to sail off into the sunset with balance and choice and intentional living. We touched on the challenges too, because let's face it, the road to tiny homes are not paved, like we've said multiple times throughout this episode. It's more of a rugged dirt path filled with legal potholes, big hoops, parking dilemmas, and a little bit of the sprinkle of the unknown. But armed with good resources and a network and a good builder and people you know, you can navigate these hurdles like a pro. And oh, let's not forget the success story from Southern California, where the biggest raise that one can find is from downsizing your home. There's a lot of great adventure also out there when you look into school buses converting into tiny homes, and there's just a lot of great opportunity that you can be inspired by endlessly. In closing, today's episode highlighted tiny house living. It's not just a trend. It's a lifestyle choice that can lead to financial freedom, reduced stress, and greater opportunity. It's about making bold choices and being intentional to step off the beaten path and figure out what you want to do. So if you're considering a tiny home or considering sharing this with a friend, either would be great. But no matter what, let's choose a more intentional way of living. And let's intentionally choose to subscribe to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming if you enjoyed today's episode. Share it with a friend so that they can learn the power of intentional living and maybe even have a discussion on tiny homes. Of course, links to anything I mentioned and today's guest are all in the show notes. Head over to MoneyTalkWithSkylarFleming.com to learn more and consider adding your email to my list. Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.